Paul Kelly, and I grew up in Kerry in Tralee and in Ennison in County Clare. So in my teenage years, with a couple of friends, we used to go and visit the, there was a couple of radio stations in Tralee at that stage, very, very basic. I remember going into one station and they actually had one record deck, so they were trying to proceed on that basis. So then I moved to Ennis, and I think I was sort of 17 when I moved there, so 1 year there before I headed away to college. So that's where I got my sort of first introduction to actually working on a station. So I worked on Radio Clare, which at that stage was the only pirate in Ennis. So I used to do an evening programme on a Sunday night from 8 until 10, just sort of playing my own selection of music. And then during the sort of holidays, the Christmas holidays and the Easter holidays, we used to get a couple of extra slots. And then that summer, I ended up actually doing the Drive Time programme. My one and only time getting paid on pirate radio, not much, but a little bit of money. So I finished up with them then at the end of the summer because I was away to college, and it just wasn't possible to sort of hold down sort of a regular slot.
And were they AM, FM, shortwave radio, do you know?
They were FM, and they were at that stage, I'd say relatively low powered, around 96, 97 megahertz, probably running, I'd say 30, 40 watts, and transmitting directly from the studios, which were in the centre of town. During the summer then, they did an upgrade. Mike Richardson, the guy who used to run Big L and subsequently WRKY or WKRY down in Killarney, I think provided a lot of the equipment, and they upgraded from mono, they had been mono prior to that, to stereo. And they linked from sort of a small stereo link, a studio transmitter, out to a higher powered one, I'd say 100 to 200 watts, on a nearby hill, and that gave them a lot of coverage around. But they were just purely an FM station.
Mm. And how many years, do you know, was it actually on the air for?
I think it may have folded before 1988, because the second station came on, WCR West Coast Radio. And that seemed to sort of pull in, I think, a lot of sort of the advertising revenue that was available in the town, and yet the usual thing where a number of the presenters moved over and so on and so on. So they certainly faded before, I'd say, probably 87, but I can't say for definite.
Mm. Do you know how many people were involved in the running of the station?
There was two guys who were sort of ran it and owned it. Mm. I think they were brothers-in-law. Mm. So some sort of family relationship by marriage. Then you had sort of, you know, coming and going, even in my short time there, various studio managers come, station managers, and it's the usual thing. It was quite sort of high turnover of staff coming through, you know, and the vast majority, I'd imagine, were unpaid. So like myself, you know, just doing slots the weekend and so on, and probably the people running the weekday main slots probably getting some amount of payment, but not much.
And how many radio DJs do you know that they have there?
I would imagine probably 20 to 30, I would have thought. Mm. But a lot of those would have been people like myself just doing, you know, a 2-hour slot at the weekends. Mm.
And had you been a fan of pirate radio or had an interest in pirate radio before you started?
Yeah, absolutely. For a good number of years, both FM, you know, say I'd come to Dublin to visit my grandparents or something like that, and you're sort of faced with this full dial of, you know, whole range of stations from very amateur to, you know, highly professional, like say Nova and so on. So it was lovely, you know.
Yeah.
And then subsequently I started getting into sort of shortwave and listening to sort of, you know, shortwave pirates as well, you know.
Mm. And while you were working for that station, were you ever raided? Was your signal ever jammed at all?
No.
You had no experience with the dramatic raids of say Nova or
No experience at all, you know. No excitement on that front, you know.
So how popular then was Radio Clare? Did you have a lot of interaction with your listeners?
It was actually relatively limited. they had no phone line coming into the studio. So what they had was again, this may be as much to do with sort of just the state of telecoms generally in the country at that stage, you know, where, you know, you had to wait probably for 9 months just to get a telephone line and so on. So what they had was the phone number for the radio station was actually one of the two owners' houses. And when requests would come in, he would use a CB radio send up sort of requests and any other bits of information to us. So it was even for that, it seemed a bit archaic even then, but that was the system that we had.
And what sort of, kind of going on that, what sort of technology would you have used, like the equipment?
It was basic. I mean, you know, they had sort of obviously a mixing desk, which was relatively basic, a couple of turntables, a couple of tape decks. They had no cartridge machines. The turntables weren't activated off the sound desk or anything like that. And they also had this big reel-to-reel system as well. And they seemed to sort of keep a lot of the ads on that. So they'd record all the ads and then you'd use that. And then they also used the reel-to-reel sometimes overnight. They'd let it play to keep it going, music going for another couple of hours. So very basic technology, to be honest.
Mm. And so after your involvement then with Radio Clare, was there any other stations that you had involved in?
Yeah, so again, I went to college in Limerick and I worked for two stations there. So the first year I was sort of coming back in because I had sort of a part-time job in Ennis. Mm. So I didn't have time to do anything. But then I got a Sunday night slot on Radio Munster. So Radio Munster were one of sort of the general stations there, again an FM only station, and you know, they had, I think, a couple of sort of relays as well. So worked away on them, and again quite sort of basic equipment in that station. A bit more interaction with the listeners, because, you know, people could phone in, but again the technology was very basic. If you wanted to put them on air, you literally put sort of the handset up against the microphone, and that was the way it worked, and you could have them talking or playing requests or whatever. But to give you an example of how basic the station was, the actual, I can remember vividly, the microphone was literally on sort of a mic stand, and the lads who owned the station, I think it was a couple of brothers, came in one night and said they needed the mic stand. I was like, well, we're live on air, I need the mic stand. Well, we need it because we run a nightclub out in Nina, and we need it. We're going out now to run the disco, Sunday night disco, whatever. Mm-hmm. So they found a broomstick for me and literally taped the microphone to the broomstick, and that was that.
Do you have any particular anecdotes or memories of your time on Pirate Radio that really stand out to you, that you'd like to kind of go for the archives, if you will?
Probably a couple, but there was just one more station first of all I was on, which was Hits 954. So again, that would have been in, let me get this right now, I don't think, what year did I do the J1? It was until that summer. Yeah, so it was would have been, I think, certainly late 1987, and then sort of spring into early summer of 1988. And they were a great station because they were using the proper equipment, the cartridge machines and so on. Apparently, I think some of the equipment certainly comes through ABC in Waterford, and I think prior to that it was sort of ex-Caroline equipment, and had a couple of ex-Caroline DJs and so on as well. Mm. They were on AM as well as FM, but the AM was relatively weak, and they were one of those, you know, tightly formatted stations. It was a top 40 station, so everything was sort of rigid and planned, and you'd limited flexibility, but it was really like sort of much more professional in terms of how it operated and the equipment it used and so on, you know. Yeah, in terms of, I think, well, an anecdote, if you want to call it that, I remember one time the manager of the station, this Canadian-Irish guy, came in to the one in Ennis, and he was sort of brought in, and he'd worked in the Deep Voice, and he'd worked in sort of radio in Canada, allegedly, and so on. But anyway, he was he'd sort of a little bit of a problem with the drink and so on. And he was meant to be on after me, and he was sort of sleeping. There was a little sort of attic overhead, so my slot was finishing at 10, and I sort of had to get home. So I sort of went up to him, and I think sort of he's surely fallen asleep, like, because he was sort of drinking all day or whatever. But I couldn't wake him up anyway, so went down anyway, and just literally left a record on to play. And, you know, the hope was that, you know, it would literally, the record would finish off, and it would just sort of go into silence after that. Unfortunately, there was a bit of a cut in the record, so it actually went into sort of a loop. So I arrive home, just turn on the radio, expecting to hear silence, and so that's what I faced, unfortunately. Anyway, so the station owners weren't too happy, but they'd hired this fella anyway, you know. So we had a few people called to the door from time to time, and you'd always, you know, security was always an issue. So I never faced any problems, but it was always an issue, you know.
Mm. So were you involved then with radio at the sort of, say, the end of 1988 when the stations were sort of forced to close down?
No, I wasn't, because again, I'd gone off to do the J1 in the States, so I'd come back. It was in my final year of college, so I had to sort of focus a little bit. But I did actually manage. I was just looking through some of my I'd kept some band scans. So this one here now would have been 22nd of December. 88, so I would have done this in Ennis. I'd obviously gone home from college, so I was very conscious that, you know, every stations were closing down at the end of the month. So one of the things, and I'd forgotten completely, I just discovered this last weekend, so I actually have the times that all the stations in the area closed down at. So, you know, Radio Limney, 1:30 in the morning on the 24th of December, the Sound Channel in Limerick, 1900 hours on the 30th and the 12th, midnight on the 30th and the 12th for West Coast Radio in Ennis, Radio Vera in Limerick, 6:15 in the evening on the 31st and the 12th, and their sister station Radio Munster just before that at 1800 hours on the 31st of the 12th. So again, I had sort of a quarter wave dipole, which is sort of quite a nice sort of aerial, just up on the chimney of the parents' house. So it actually meant I was able to pick up quite a lot of fairly distant FM stations.
So what frequency then was Radio Clare and Radio Munster then?
Radio Clare was gone by that stage, but they were around 1996. Radio Munster. Radio Munster had a couple of relays, so you can see here they're on 95.75. They're also down here, they should have been on one sort of Radio Vera. Radio Vera is where their sister station. So literally I think Vera was meant to be sort of Radio Caroline type name or something like that. But they had a couple of relays. Certainly they had one, I think, in West Limerick, and they had one out around the Nina area as well. So strong, very, very clear signal. But the actual sort of the actual DJs and stuff wouldn't have been particularly brilliant, you know. So the big one in that stage, the most professional one in Limerick, would have been the Sound Channel.
And kind of the impression I'm getting from this is that the shutting down of all these pirate radio stations, certainly for people who've been involved and people who've been fans of it like yourself, it kind of does really seem like the end of a sort of an era. That there was, you know, obviously you were so invested in it that you did take the time to jot down when these pivotal stations were closing. What was sort of, for you, like, what was the feeling when you were hearing that these were all kind of shutting down and ending then, and that was the sort of the end of the pirate era?
It's hard to recall 30 years later, but I think probably a lot of disappointment and so on, because, you know, what you had was, you know, certainly they were illegal, but it was more sort of a free-for-all, you know. There wasn't criminality to any great extent anyway involved in any of this, you know, so it was just purely, you know, license to roam, if you want to call it that. So, and it was great fun for you know, I mean, obviously some of the stations were more professional than others, but for a lot of us it was sort of a bit of crack and all the rest of it. And obviously this was in sort of the pre-internet era, so you know radio stations and so on were, you know, for like some music and so on, you know, if people wanted to hear music, that's where you heard music, aside from sort of tapes and records, and I suppose CDs were coming in around then as well. But yeah, so it was with a bit of disappointment. Again, I moved to Dublin after that, so I was keep an eye out on the dial, and you know, it was interesting to see that, you know, it was quiet for a while, but early 90s a lot of good pirates started to everything, you know, alternative music through to dance and so on, very much music based. They're still there, obviously. You can still pick up quite a lot on FM and one or two on AM, so keep a bit of a listening in still now from time to time, but I've had no engagement sort of since then.